Welcome to Career Tools. This week, how to get through your mail in 30 minutes. The questions this cast answers are, how can I get through all of my mail in 30 minutes? Will I ever get to inbox zero? And when do I do my email? With the holidays behind us, a new year lies ahead with a grand opportunity for you and your organisation to have a big impact. If you've ever considered sending groups to our public conferences and the cost of travel and lodging made it difficult, let us come directly to you. You don't have to lose any time out of your operational tempo, and we make it simple and affordable. Manager Tools will train your group of up to 30 people for any of our standard offerings, the Effective Manager, Effective Communicator, or Effective Hiring Manager. We can promote your folks to be on the same page about professional and managerial guidance. After all, it's all about results and retention through effective relationships and communication. Contact Maggie to discuss options and how we can help you and your organisation be even more effective. Maggie@manager-tools.com or www.manager-tools.com/organisations. During the summer, we re-released or consolidated a bunch of our email guidance and put them into podcasts so that all of the information was in one place to make it easier for people to deal with email. So that's one of the things that people complain about a lot. Like, why are you stressed at work? Email seems to be my boss and email. There's like the two answers. And one of the things we have recommended for years and years and years, but was also re-recommended in those casts, was only opening your email 3 times a day for 30 minutes at a time. So you get into work. First thing you, or not necessarily first thing you do, but sometime in the early part of the morning, you do email for 30 minutes in the middle of the day, either before or after lunch, and then towards the end of the day. And so email only takes 1.5 hours all day, and you have to do effectively 4 hours worth of email in 30 minutes, because you'll never go more than 4 hours apart from overnight. You'll never go more than 4 business hours without looking at your email, but you have to get through everything that came in 30 minutes. And of course, the next question we're asked is, well, how do you get through it in 30 minutes? Like, that's impossible. It's not. And we're going to show you the secret of what to do and how it's not impossible today.
Yes. We're going to cover 4 things. We use a triage method. We use a specific order. We answer anything that could be answered in 2 minutes. And we delete or archive liberally.
Yeah, get stuff out. So triage, for anybody who hasn't heard the term before, is what's used in hospitals and accident scenes to make sure the most injured people get help first. So the doctors and nurses assign a degree of urgency to specific wounds or illnesses. So if you're having a heart attack, obviously that's way more urgent than someone who has a paper cut. And they use that to make an order for all of the people. If there's been a big accident and there's 20 or 30 people injured, then you want to make sure that you're going to the people who are most injured first. So you make the doctors and nurses make an order based on the injuries. And the categories are pretty broad, which means the triage staff are quickly able to get the patients categorized and to the right people. So people who are having a heart attack are obviously very urgent, but they need specific things in order to be helped. So they need to be in the right place, or the equipment that they need needs to go to them. Mm-hmm. Whereas somebody who is walking wounded or has a paper cut, you know, can probably sit down where they are and just stay there until we're ready, kind of thing. So the doctors work on the most urgent cases first and then work down to the less urgent or the less serious illnesses. So that's what where triage comes from and what it means. It's about looking at urgency and importance and then working through a list of things in that order. So you can do the same with email, because not all email is equal. Some email is truly urgent and some isn't.
Most of it isn't, maybe.
Right.
Yeah, there's so many things I think that tell us that email is urgent, when in fact, email is a non-urgent form of communication. It's a asynchronous form of communication. And it's so funny, I was at an IT organization earlier this year, and I said, of course, you wouldn't send an email if the building was on fire. There was actually a comment after that someone said, no, they would send a Slack message instead, which I'm very worried about this particular organization.
The safety.
Yeah, I worry about the safety of their people. In terms of urgency, if you're sending urgent emails, you're doing it wrong. Email isn't the right method of communication when there is urgency. Can you imagine being in an accident, being seriously injured, and sending an email to get an ambulance? There's no speed associated with that. You would, of course, call the emergency numbers. And the reason for this is because, of course, phone calls are a more urgent form of communication. If something is urgent, you make a call. And some people out there will have heard this guidance or be aware of this or understand it, and others may not have. And if they haven't read this guidance, they may be sending you email they believe is urgent. So we're going to cover it because it's going to come into your inbox regardless of how you feel or how we feel about the relative urgency of email. Some email is from someone important to you. Maybe your boss, who, of course, controls your addiction to food and clothing and shelter. Other emails, less important. There's FYIs and CYAs. There's all kinds of things that come in. I mean, I think I've done a pretty good job of it. I only really check the emails that are unread and that they're filtered pretty heavily, but I get a lot of emails from J.Crew, thousands of them. And of course, they're not sent to my inbox. They're sent to a junk mail. Sorry, J.Crew.
And they all say urgent because this sale ends today. No, J.Crew, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah. It's so true. Because of this, treating all your email with equal attention, with equal amounts of attention and things like that, it's a way to make your email last all day. If you're struggling to make your email be a shorter endeavor, this might be a really helpful thing for you because this technique can really change things, triaging.
The moment you think of not all email being equal, it changes the way you look at it entirely, I think. So in order to make it easy for you to see which emails should be treated first, use rules and folders to divide your email. And we're not going to go into specifics because they're different for everybody's system. But for most email systems, you can divide your emails. And the original email guidance we gave you a list of folders to use. So you need a rule that separates the emails from your boss and puts them in a folder or tags them or something so that you can see those separately. Your peers, your team, so your directs, if you have directs, your customers, anything that's been marked as urgent. And I would encourage you to pay attention to those urgent emails and decide whether somebody has a habit of making things urgent when they're not, so that later, you know, when you've if you pay attention for a couple of weeks, you'll realize that some people have a thing about marking emails urgent, and they never are. So you can then change your filter or just ignore them, or ignore the urgency at least. Any message you're CC'd on goes in a separate place or is either tagged or in a separate folder. Anything that's about a project you're on, so you want to have all of the emails for a certain project in one place. One of the ways that you can do this is encourage people, if you work on multiple projects at a time, to encourage people to put the project name in the subject line. That helps everybody, both with knowing what it's about and also with filtering for emails. And then there's just everything else.
Yeah, all the other junk.
Yeah.
You can set these rules up, and the rules direct the messages from your boss into the boss's folder, your peers into the peer folder, so on and so forth. So that your email is really categorizing itself. It lines it up in the right order for you to deal with it. So we're actually allowing your inbox to do this for you a little bit, right? The triage situation is almost controlled by the rules and the folders that are being used, which is really helpful because for a lot of us, some of the stuff you get is just, it's not actionable. So many of my emails are unactionable. And I think in my previous role, it was even more egregious. Egregious is a really negative word. There was just a lot of CC, a lot of round robin, a lot of reply all, and it's not actionable from, you know, my position at the time. It was just not something I had any, there was no response I could give. I was, you know, it wasn't part of my work. And so spending time on that is really not as effective if you only have 30 minutes to get through 4 hours worth of email. So we're going to set up the rules, and then your email will sort itself, which would be really helpful. And then we're going to go through it in a specific order. So we're going to use this order specifically. Start with your boss. When your calendar says to you, hey, it's time to spend 30 minutes on email, open the email, your inbox, and look in your boss folder. Look first at that folder. Our bosses, rightly, think that they're the most important person in our work world, and they should be. Since they're responsible for getting us paid, we agree.
Yes.
Yes. Some bosses don't send a lot of email, so that's fun for you. It's nice for you. Makes your inbox time shorter. Some bosses send email all day long, and you're going to have a lot of email to deal with there. How much email you'll have in there really depends on your boss, their style, remoteness, all kinds of different factors. But sometimes if that folder's empty, you'll be able to skip right to the next thing on the list, which is customers.
The other thing about bosses before you go on is there's actually for people in general, if you look at email from a specific person, is that most people have some kind of pattern. So for example, you might get 6 emails from your boss that are there when you first come in the morning, and then they don't send any email because they tend to do their email at home after dinner with the kids, right? And so those emails have come in at 9, 10 o'clock to you, and they're not there until the morning. Other people do that sporadic thing where they send one an hour. You know, it's the same 8 in a day, but they're spread out. Someone I know, I often got emails from her on a Sunday night, like between 6 and 8, because that was her going through, like, where am I? What do I need to do? What's my calendar for next week? It was kind of her thinking time. And so I knew that on Mondays I would have a whole bunch of, she was one of my peers, so her email was still important. But I knew I would always have 4 or 5 emails from her on a Monday morning when I started my day. So even if you do have a lot of emails from your boss, there may be patterns. So it may be that you have to spend the entirety or most of the 30 minutes in the morning on your boss, but the later 2 sessions, you can go down to some of these other ones because you haven't got any more from them. That may be depending on their meeting schedule. It just may be just their preferences of when they do what kind of work. So that's another pattern to look out for. If your boss does tend to have a lot in the morning, you may want to stretch that session to like 45 minutes and then just do 15 minutes at lunch and just kind of tweak the timing a little based on, you know, making sure that you have time to reply to whatever your boss is sending you.
Yeah, next we're going to move on to customers. That's our second list. That's our second item. Whether your customers are internal or external, you want to know if there's a problem as soon as possible. Once we've determined that your boss is happy, if your boss is happy, that's good. Next, we're going to evaluate if our customers are happy. Because if your boss is happy, but the customers are not, your boss probably won't be happy for very long. Second on the list is customers. After we've looked at that folder, that list, we are going to move to peers and directs. More people who can cause you some problems. After your boss and your customers, of course, the most likely people who need your attention promptly are your peers. And if you have them, your directs as well. Your directs could easily be held up on their work if you don't see their email asking for decisions or things like that. And so there is some urgency, of course, associated with their notes, the information they're sharing with you, their questions and such. So that's the next thing on our list. And actually, I don't know about you, Wendy. I don't get a ton of email from Mark. I get very few email from Mark and very few email from Mike, actually. Although Mark's email, when I do get them, they're pretty fast responses. Mike's emails, it takes me a very long time to respond. If I have an email from Mike, it's a good 20, 25 minute response time. The emails are dense and things like that. It's mostly peer emails that I spend, you know, a large portion of my day on. I guess that could be because we're all kind of remote. So I said kind of remote, like we're nearby. We're fully remote.
Well, you and I are like, 100 miles apart, but everybody else is farther away. Yeah, I find that too. And I think the other thing about it is disprofiles, right? Mark's a high D. He's a DI, but at work he's mostly D. And so his emails tend to be short, yes, no questions, things that are confirmations, like, did you do this? Yes, no. Can you find this piece of information for me? They're very specific and they're often quite easy to respond to, whereas Mike is a high C, which means he sends you more detail and he wants a more detailed response. And he's also more patient about waiting for that response. Mark wants an instant answer because he's a high D and high Ds want instant answers, whereas Mike wants the answer to be right and he's willing to give you more time in order to get it right. And so that's another kind of component of thinking about who sends you emails and when they send you and what kind of responses they need. And that helps you again with this whole triaging process in terms of what do I need to do first and how deeply do I need to go into it.
Mm-hmm.
Just to cover off so DISC is a behavioral profile, tells you about what your behavioral preferences are and what other people's behavioral preferences are. And if you want to have good relationships, then you will act in a way that goes with their preferences, not your own. That's the secret of DISC. We have a bunch of podcasts about it. But just to cover off, since we don't have an I or an S boss, an I boss will also probably send you fairly short things. And the danger with emails from high I bosses is they tend to have really exciting ideas that they're very excited about. And you go off and do a whole bunch of work. And then you find, oh, it was only a thought. Like, I didn't actually think we were going to go do that. So high I bosses also are less email focused. They'll probably come to your desk if you're nearby, or they'll call, or they'll text, or they'll Slack or WhatsApp or whatever the new app is. That's how I's communicate. So if you do have a high I boss who very rarely emails but uses all of those other methods of communication, you might want to reserve some of your email time for those methods. You know, like, instead of thinking, oh, this is my 30 minutes for email, think this is my 15 minutes to reply to my boss in whatever method they use to communicate to you. Obviously, you can't make them wait. If they came to your desk, you have to answer them then. Okay. Sorry, you have to come back at 11:30. High S bosses are concerned with people. And so they want to make sure that you have everything you need in order to answer. And they want to make sure that the answer they receive is complete and understanding of the people situation. So, you know, if you're going to cut costs, then you have to address how that's going to affect the people in the team for a high S. So they do send email, but again, it's probably less. They're probably more likely to call you or stop by. So again, like, maybe you want to use 10 minutes of your email time to think about, okay, should I just go by my high S boss's cube and say good morning and ask how they are, and then address whatever it is they asked you or address any questions they have for the morning. And then you can go on to all the others. And the DISC profile applies to everybody. It applies to customers. If you've got a high I customer, they're much more likely to call or text you. If you've got a high C peer, they're much more likely to send you a very long email and require something in depth, but be more patient about you sending it back. So, whilst we're telling you how to get through your email in 30 minutes, it's only a part of communication. And, you know, communication happens in a whole bunch of different mediums, and you may need to put time aside for those mediums as well. Wow, that was a big tangent. I'm sorry.
It's all right. It's helpful. It's the start of a new year, a new decade. And if you're like us, you might be reinvesting in your processes. You might consider using Roadmap. It tracks your Trinity process. You can track your steps, your data. Maybe you want to know how many one-on-ones you're doing or how they're going. Maybe you're interested in how much feedback you're delivering. Roadmap allows you to track your own progress, and it can also track the progress of your directs. As part of a personal license, you get Roadmap, show notes for all the casts, the interview creation tool, and a note each week from Mark and Wendy. For personal and professional productivity, a personal license really can't be beat. Have a great 2020. The next thing that we're going to talk about is actioning your email. Now that you know the order, what do you do when you find an email that needs to be actioned? First, we're going to answer anything that can be answered in 2 minutes or less. So If you're a fan of David Allen, you may have read the book Getting Things Done, and the 2-minute rule is pretty well known. If an email only needs a quick reply or forwarding to someone else, then do that right now while you have it open. Then move it to your archive since it's now actioned and you don't need it again. So step one, quickly
don't
action.
Don't be one of those people with 50,000 emails in your inbox. If it's done, move it out of the way.
Oh my gosh. I've seen people with like 21,000 unopened emails, and it just gives
me shudder.
Yeah, it just gives me nightmares. Next, if there's longer items, reply and move those items to your task list. So working from your inbox is another reason that people find email lasts all day, because of course there are actionable task items in there that take a while. Your tasks, which is anything that you need to do that will take longer than 2 minutes, should not be in your inbox, but on your actual task list. You need a way to track those things that need to get done. And some of them come in through email. They're really kind of two different beasts, right? Email is for communication. The task list that you're using to track, whatever format that takes, those are really about prioritization and organization of your work, the things that need to get done, and actually getting those tasks done.
Right. So an email from Mark that's a yes, no, is probably something you can do in less than 2 minutes. I'll probably do that in less than 10 seconds. But an email from Mike, as you said, that you have to read slowly and that you have to respond to in more depth, that wouldn't stay in your inbox. That would go on your task list so that you put time aside to actually think about what's being asked and make sure that your answer is sufficient. And yes, you probably are then going to open your email and reply by email. But the task is about thinking about whatever subject it is and creating a response. The task isn't email somebody back.
And sometimes it's about gathering data or putting together your thoughts. It's, you know, even a reply to an email that takes more than 2 minutes is technically a task.
Exactly.
We talked about Mike, but if a customer asks advice about which product to buy, you don't really need to do any research. You probably know your products inside out, hopefully. However, it takes 4 or 5 paragraphs, and that takes more than 2 minutes. And answering that email is really a task that should go on your task list. If it's data gathering or processing, things like that. And you do need to send a reply to those emails. Please, guys, don't ignore them.
You can't do is put the email on your task list and then not reply to the person till you've got to that task and done the task, because all you're going to do is get emails. I'm sure everybody's had this experience. We've had it too, where you send an email to someone and you have no idea whether the response is going to come in 2 minutes or 2 days or 2 weeks. And you're just sitting there wondering,
yeah,
is it lost in their 20,000 unopened emails?
Maybe. It takes less than 2 minutes to add the task to your list and send an email that says, thank you for the question. It'll take me a little time, a little research, whatever it is, and I'll get back to you in 48 hours or whatever time frame is reasonable. I feel like this is a classic kind of thing. You know, that email people get that's automated that says, we've received your order.
Mm-hmm.
This action that we're recommending is kind of your personal version of, we've received your order. It's a way of saying, yes, I've gotten your email. I'm actioning it, working on it. Because it's absolutely reasonable that if the person who sends you a note doesn't get some response back from you saying, I'm working it, it's absolutely reasonable for them to assume that you maybe didn't read it.
Right, you missed it.
Yeah, whatever thing, maybe you're traveling. There's all kinds of reasons you might not have seen the email or anything like that. And so this email is two things. It's reassuring them that, yes, I've seen your email. I'm going to do something about it. I'm here. You know, these emails, they go into the ether. And it's also, it's a preemptive strike.
Yes.
If you don't do this, your inbox will fill up with emails asking about the response that you owe them. And that's another thing that will cause your inbox to take much longer, because you have to send an email, send a note, and your inbox gets more and more full. Because you didn't tell them, yes, I'm working on it. And they have questions.
Of course. Like, when are you going to do this thing for me? It's, you know, Amazon is, I love Amazon. I know
not everybody
thinks that Amazon is awesome, but I love Amazon, especially when they bring me stuff in 2 hours. But if you think about the number of times they communicate with you, that's so, in part, they don't have to have huge customer service teams answering questions from buyers. They send you an email to say, yes, I got the order. Yes, we've charged your card. Yes, we're putting it in a box. Yes, it's left the warehouse. Yes, it's going to be delivered today. Yes, it's at your doorstep and here's the picture. And the reason they do that is to save them money in terms of customer service. And if you think of a customer service team, that it's time, essentially, it's multiplied by lots of people, but it's time of replying to the emails. If they didn't send all of those, of people saying, where's my stuff? Where's my stuff? Where's my stuff?
Exactly.
So you're doing exactly the same thing. So if you think about when you're answering your emails, think about Amazon and send at least as many notifications as they do. And maybe that's too many, but at least one of like, I'm going to get back to you in 48 hours. And if you can't, if you stay 48 hours, and at 24 hours, you know, I'm not going to get back to them in 48 hours. Send another note that says, I'm delayed because of this, or I couldn't get to it, or whatever. And here's the revised timeline. Again, it saves a whole bunch of email coming into your inbox.
And I think that there's some really great stuff out there and a lot of email clients, which, of course, there's a million. So we're not going to really get too deep into that. I think there's a lot of really great options out there for if you wanted to set a reminder. So if you've said, I'm going to respond in 48 hours, it's really Luddite of me, but we use Gmail and I use the online inbox a lot because I travel so much. They have like a star email thing, and I have emails in there that are still waiting to be actioned. And it sends me a reminder, like it's automated to say, hey, you have emails still in here pending your action. Don't let yourself be, not responding. Make sure that if you say 24 hours, 48 hours, whatever it is, that you have a mechanism for reminding yourself and you have that email in a place where you can get to it, right? A specific folder. I'm sure there's all kinds of different ways to do that. And I'm really bad at that stuff.
A lot of the emails now have Mark has this turned on. I don't, again, Mark uses Gmail and so do I. And I look at his email because sometimes I act like his assistant, and he has it turned on where if he sends an email to certain people and they haven't replied in 3 days, it tells him, it puts the email back at the top of his list and says, hey, you haven't heard from this person, which is another great, why rely on your memory when technology can do it for you?
Oh, I love that. Actually, love it. I woke up in the middle of the night last night realizing that the vet hadn't responded to me, and I didn't write it down because I was sleeping. So I got up this morning and Gmail had said, hey, you sent this 4 days ago. Did you want to try again? And I was a moment of happiness, which is rare for my inbox. So,
of course.
Yeah. So, okay, we'll recap. Sorry, guys. We haven't talked in a while. So now we're just, chilling on the cast. To recap, the process is going to be open the boss folder, answer any email that will take 2 minutes or less. Put any tasks onto your task list that you have to do in the future and send a response letting people know when the tasks will be complete. That's the process. We're going to open the customer folder, answer an email that takes 2 minutes, put tasks on the list, send a response, so on and so forth through all the folders in order until you get to the end. If your boss folder takes 30 minutes, which would mean at least 15 2-minute or more tasks that came in since the last time you looked at your email, then you won't get to your folders until the next time you look at email. And don't worry, if something really catches fire, someone will call, they'll text, they'll come to your office, they'll come to your cube, they'll come to your desk, they will find you. And you're gonna see it again in 4 hours, which is not that long, right? I send emails and then forget for 4 days.
Well, I think in general, most people are so bad at email. Actually, the standard you have to reach to be better than most people isn't very high. No, I don't think that you should be aiming for not very high. I think you should be aiming for being super efficient. But if you worry, I'm not going to, my boss fills up my inbox in the morning, and so I'm going to do all of his then, and then I'm going to open it at lunch, and he sent me 2 more emails, and so I'm going to get to the customers, I maybe get to my peers, I don't get to the others, and then at the end of the day, maybe you finally get down to some of those other less important ones, and you think, oh, people are going to, be asking, what did I, but they're not going to be asking, have you seen my email, because you're going to be sending responses and saying, hey, I'm putting this on my list. You'll hear from me whenever. And also people just expect other people to lose emails, forget to answer them, not answer for 3 days. Like that seems to be the standard. Mm-hmm. So just because you're now holding yourself to a higher standard, don't worry that you're not getting through all of it. You never were getting through all of it, first of all. And second of all, yep. Most people won't notice. Your boss will suddenly notice and your customers will notice that you're doing a lot better with email. You're being a lot more responsive because you've got those as your priority. But, you know, if HR sends you an email about a change to the system, or someone sends you a note that says, hey, the canteen's closing early because it's the day before Thanksgiving, and you never get to that email, okay, well, you might be hungry, but hopefully there's a Starbucks nearby.
Yeah. Amazon will bring you food.
Exactly. Uber Eats, you know, all of those things.
Yeah. There may be one sticking point when you're implementing this process. If your boss folder is full of emails from weeks ago that you haven't dealt with, that might cause some consternation. It might make things a little harder. And what we recommend is that you just declare bankruptcy. Only action those emails that have come in the last 24 hours.
You don't have to do that out loud, by the way. You don't have to stand up. I declare bankruptcy. We're doing a mental thing here. I just realized I wrote that and I was just like, oh, wait a minute. There's going to be all these people standing up saying, I declare bankruptcy. No.
That would be so awkward.
Wouldn't it? Don't do that. Just do it in your mind. Just think all of the ones past 24 hours, just ignore them for now and do the ones from the last 24 hours.
Yeah. Do this for all of the folders. And so then when you get back to the boss folder, if those are new, there's anything else in there that's new from the last 24 hours, deal with those. And then start on your backlog. You cannot get out of email jail if you try to deal with the backlog and the incoming emails at the same time. So give yourself the space to deal with what's coming in that's urgent. And then once those have been actioned, go ahead and start on that backlog. This is the method, of course, that I use. But this method is so much more effective that you're going to very quickly feel that you're getting traction. Mm-hmm. And you're actually going to be using your inbox as something that requires you to do things rather than just looking at information, which is what my email life used to be. So super fun.
I think after the interview close, which is in the interview series about how to close an interview so that you get an offer, this is the second most common thing that people write and say, I tried it and it worked.
Oh, that's great.
And they're
great.
Astounded that you can do email in 30 minutes, 3 times a day. That they don't believe it'll work. And they're like, I tried it. I didn't think it was going to work. And oh my gosh, it worked. So if you're feeling a little faithless, honestly, it's like it's the second most common subject for which we get those emails.
It's so funny because I think that, you know, we have so many people listening and then they're not sure and stuff like that. About some of the guidance, like, oh, is this really going to work? But you know what's funny about it is that we all started using email at a different time in our career. And I would even go so far, I think, you know, I've been thinking a lot recently, there's a book I read about management is the one thing that they still assume you learn by osmosis. Mm-hmm. I think too, though, with email, there's no recommendations out there about how to deal with your inbox. It's so, I suppose, like people have blogs and things, but nobody is, I mean, certainly when I went into the workforce, there was no one out there who said, hey, you know, you're going to get a couple hundred email a day. It's a lot. Here's what you do. Nobody said anything.
Nobody. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was in college, email didn't exist. So that's how old I am. Actually, it did exist, but not for normal people. So I have no idea. Maybe now when you go to college, they teach you email, but I somehow suspect not.
No.
So nobody ever learns how to do email.
You just do what makes the most sense to you. And then,
yeah.
And while that's fine, there's no, you know, system there. If we can get enough people on one system, then we can make the next upgrade, right?
Yes.
We're going from null to one. After that, we can go to two. This will just make your lives easier, guys. It's, we're not always here to make your lives easier, but today we are.
Yeah, today, this is what's going to work.
At the start of the new decade and the start of your new inbox, it's going to be great.
Indeed. It's going to be awesome. So last up, we have delete or archive liberally. It really is rare for you to need an email from a year ago. Right?
Yeah.
Most, And most corporate systems limit the amount of space email can take up for each person. Just if you think, you know, if you have 10 gigabytes and you multiply that by a 400 person firm, there's a lot of space that the company is paying for. Like, all those servers have to be paid for. So if you're bumping up against the limit, then just archive the oldest stuff. If you've been at the company 10 years and you've got emails from 9 years ago, delete them. They're almost certainly obsolete. And I bet you can delete them without having any adverse effects.
The idea of the size of those files is baffling, right? You don't watch the show Silicon Valley, do you?
I have watched a couple, but not recently.
One of the episodes I saw recently was about they're doing data compression because of, they're saying, like, in the show, they're like, we're running out of space, which of course I had never considered, not being a software person, but I'm certain that at some point we will run out of server space, and you don't want to contribute to that. So even if you don't have a limit, deleting email is still a good idea. The less email you have, the easier it is to find the ones you're looking for, right? It's kind of like that Marie Kondo, like, joy thing. Right.
Yeah. I mean, when you have to search for something, you search for something like random, like, I'm looking for something in Chicago, so I'm just going to search for things in Chicago. On and off, I deal with hotels, depending on what other people are doing in the company. If I've got a bunch of emails from hotels in Chicago saying, wouldn't you like to use our hotel for conferences? Those are almost certainly not the emails I'm looking for in Chicago. So I delete those once I've replied to them, because them coming up later in email, in a search that I'm doing, is probably, they just get in the way.
Yeah.
Because, you know, a year later, the people have changed, the hotels have changed brands, they change their name, you know, hotels change all of the time. So an email from a hotel from a year ago is almost certainly rubbish. So, but when I search now, if I delete all of those, when I search for Chicago, maybe I've only got 100 emails to look through, and then I can look at the subject lines and find the one I'm looking for. So the less you have, the easier it is to find the things you actually want.
Mm-hmm. There's some things, client communications, things. Traditionally, I've searched my inbox here for, like, what is the old, you know, bridge number or something like that. Mm-hmm. Those emails, though, can be saved to a folder. They could be archived. There's a system for that. And things that are important, you should be putting in specific folders. But perhaps you're thinking, okay, well, I've got client communications from a couple of years ago, and it's really useful to me. Maybe your inbox is not the right place for that. There should be a customer relationship database, a management system for that, rather than your inbox. Because, again, that's siloed information. That's not really going to help out. What if you leave and they delete your email? Then what? You know,
yeah, nobody has a record of that conversation.
No, and it's not going to support the organization for it to just be hiding in your inbox. Also, because I don't know about you, I think it's just a function of how good our search is on the website. I am constantly baffled. I cannot search my inbox and find an email. I'm like, oh, it's about roadmap or it's about this. Mm-hmm. And I type that in and my email says, oh, we don't, never heard of that. All the time. I do not speak Gmail very well. I don't.
I have the same problem with Finder. So we use Mac. So the search,
yeah,
the search function on Macs is called Finder. I have, when I'm looking for files, and I know what I named a file, and Finder's like, nope, never known it.
Does it exist? Good luck with that.
Yeah. So in other jobs, you might have a solution. So you might have a solution that's recorded in email. So one of the things I notice, Paul, our IT guy, does, if there's a customer service query about something specific about their account, he often includes the search, the SQL search he used on the database, on the ticket. So he's essentially saving the customer question and how he got the answer on the ticket. It's not in his email, but he's saving that so that, you know, if somebody comes back to him and says, that same customer comes back and says, well, no, that's not the answer, he still knows how he got to where he got to. And also, if he gets the same question later, he can look it up and he's just got the search, so he can just copy and paste it. So you might have those kind of solutions, or you might have standard emails where you've answered a question that comes up once every 6 months, or some particular wording of something that you worked slaved over and you got the perfect sentence. Again, email isn't the right place to be keeping any of that stuff. So solutions should be on some kind of document that's backed up and available. If it's a solution that other people could use, available for other people. If you're saving pieces of text, then you can use documents. We use and love Text Expander, but not everybody can download software onto their machine. So that might not be the right place for you, but anywhere out of your email.
Your black book, right?
Your black book, yeah, which we have a cast about somewhere. Mm-hmm. Information that you frequently look for in your email and you're like, oh, I've got an email that I'm just going to go find it and it's got the perfect words in it. Don't keep that information there. Put it somewhere safer and then delete the email.
Mm-hmm, for sure. We tend to keep far more of everything than we need, including email. There's some things that are easily deletable. Status emails that are only valid for the day, week, or month. Confirmations that actions have been taken that can be seen elsewhere, right? For example, a confirmation that something's been added to the database, which obviously the database will keep track of for you. Confirmations for travel. Oh, gosh. Mm-hmm. American Airlines. I do not. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Once the travel's happened and been billed or reimbursed, there's no reason to keep that. Any email that says yep or okay or see you then or thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a fun time. Invitations to meetings, which are now on the calendar. Company-wide information emails, such as, you know, we're going to close early today or these are the special hours for the gym or something. I don't know.
Yeah, the parking lot's going to be closed because we're painting it.
Oh, yeah. And then marketing emails, J.Crew, things like that. There's a lot of things. And really being cognizant of what can be deleted or archived will make your inbox happenings much faster, right? It's going to be so much faster for you to go through your email. Reading an email, not deciding if it can be deleted, and then opening it again later and then deciding that it should be deleted is a waste of time and brain power.
Essentially doing the same work twice. And nobody likes rework, so why are you giving it to yourself?
Right.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, just assign yourself duplicate tasks.
Yeah, if your boss assigned you duplicate tasks, how mad would you be? So why are you giving it to yourself? As everybody knows, Parkinson's Law says work expands to fill the time available, and Horseman's Corollary
Corollary.
Thank you. Says work contracts to fit the time we give it. In other words, if you give something an hour, it will take an hour. If you give it 30 minutes, it only takes 30 minutes. I don't know why. It's magic. So if your email takes more than 3 30-minute periods a day, part of the reason is because you're giving it more than 30 minutes mm-hmm. three times a day. You believe that it needs to take longer. So if you restrict the time that you have, you'll get faster at triaging, faster at making decisions, faster at getting tasks onto your task list, and faster at sending replies. You just have to. It's one of those things where you have to do it before you believe it. So if you take tomorrow when you're listening to this, or if you're on the way to work, take today. Do 30 minutes of email this morning, do 30 minutes at lunchtime, and do 30 minutes at the end of the day. And we'll bet that you don't have as much email as you think you do.
Magic.
Just like magic. Exactly. Thanks, Kate. It was fun.
Thanks, Wendy. Yeah, absolutely.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with a new topic.